We are telling stories in school this week as Gail Potratz joins Sally and I to talk about digital storytelling. All that, some great picks, and much more coming up on the next edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Martin Spriggs in sunny Milwaukee, Wisconsin today. Episode 233, April 25th, 2012. Joining me on Classroom Technology Day is Sally Draper, as usual. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin.
And Gail Potratz from New London. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, everybody.
How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm swimming in digital storytelling apps.
Ah. And that's a nice lead into our topic. Those longtime listeners will remember or recognize that Classroom Technology Week comes up once a month, and we normally have a guest host. And that is this month, Gail, last month, Jason. They're a tag team. So we go down to, where is Jason? From Nebraska, Iowa, someplace down there. Gail up in beautiful New London, Wisconsin. The topic of the day is something that, Gail, you've been involved with for quite some time and something that probably has been around in different various formats for a long, long time. I can remember way back when I was in junior high school, communications or English professor assigning us a topic where we were to take multiple slides back in, you know, the days of slides, and set them to music and then narrate over the top of that music. And that was our form of digital storytelling. Do you guys have any stories like that? Remember back in the day when you had those kinds of assignments?
You must be much younger than I am. your teacher was quite progressive. Honestly, I am surprised at that.
Is that right?
That's very good.
Well, it was a big junior high, so we probably had more resources than the local elementary schools, perhaps. But we really enjoyed that and could get creative.
Sure.
And could go in many different directions. And the medium, along with the music and the writing, were tools that come in handy today. You know, so it was a great learning experience.
I guess the only thing I could relate to that, when I was in New Ulm, in a history class, we did a project where we scanned, I don't even know what that machine was called anymore, but you had to be careful your fingers didn't show up on the edges of the pictures. You held the picture in there and you scanned the picture. So we got slides, and I did something on the Renaissance man and that era of history. And we did add music. The final product was put onto a cassette tape.
Okay. Just to be clear, when I did it, the music that was going alongside my presentation was on this little black disc that had to go around on a little turntable.
Oh, so. Okay.
Don't think that this was anything too high tech. It was technology that had been around for some time. Sally, how about you?
I can't say I have any digital storytelling. I'm racking my brains, but you guys are way more advanced than me. So,
so
but you got all the components there. We should talk about exactly what digital storytelling is.
Sure. Yeah, because I think it can be defined in a lot of different ways. So what is digital storytelling?
Well, exactly like you said, Martin, defined in a lot of different ways. I think music is a big component because music can bring about emotions related to the story that you're telling. So definitely having the music background is a standard piece of digital storytelling. And letting the visuals tell the stories. You both referenced different imagery that you had on slides or that you scanned or whatever. And I think that's a big component as well. Not focusing on text so much as the audio and the visual imagery that are part of the story.
Still images or animations or full-blown video or any combination thereof. You know, we see a lot of this on the internet right now, where presentation itself is just a series of maybe still images with some catchy music and some text that tell a story, and it's very effective. It's, you know, they're 3 to 5 minutes sometimes, but they pack a lot of information in, and it walks you through how the author is thinking.
You know, I'm laughing because my big digital storytelling experience I'm thinking of that I did recently with the kids was because my iPad microphone was broken. So I didn't have a choice. We couldn't record our own voices. Mm-hmm. So I had the kids hold up little short signs. And you guys have seen those kind of digital story where there's little burst of text intermixed with the imagery. So all those are different examples.
Right. So let's continue to talk about the what is it. There are different ways to obviously define it, but there are some consistent ways to assign and assess, and there are definitely some subject areas that lend themselves better than others to this kind of digital storytelling assignment or usage in the classroom. What are those?
Boy, I think you can use this anywhere you want to create where you have a dramatic question that you want to pose to your audience, and by the end of the presentation, there should be an answer in their minds. Mm-hmm. You've appealed to their emotions through the background music, and I'll tell you that's the most important, in a true digital story, that's the most important element, in my opinion. Without that, it really isn't a true digital story, if you want to go by the definition of digital story.
You're talking about the music?
Yeah, the music, okay. the background music, what do you call that in the movie making? The soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's what they call it. I'm just going to give you a little example. There's a lot of different kinds of digital story, and the terms loosely. So very quickly, let's just say up here in New London, we hear a lot about the sandhill cranes lately. Big, beautiful bird. But I guess there's so many of them now, they're pests, they want to allow them to be shot, to be hunted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so a child might do a, quote, digital story on the sandhill crane and might put different pictures in there and their voice talking about what the crane is, what it looks like, blah, blah, blah. And that would be an example of a digital reporting, I'd call it, or maybe a photo essay. But until you add the background music and you make a presentation about the sandhill cranes and you show them flying, I was doing this in my mind yesterday, wishing I could go out and make a movie because they're in my backyard a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're just flying around. They're so beautiful. So you have this beautiful footage of them in flight with some nice background music, and then you have a guy standing there with a gun, and you have maybe you flash up the law that they want to pass or whatever, and you create this image that, oh, no, there's a possibility these birds might be destroyed. We can't let that happen. Now, that's a digital story because you've raised awareness through emotion.
Right.
But the other things were just digital reporting, and they're okay. And I don't imagine a kindergartner doing a digital story in that sense.
Sure. So there's a difference between, let's say, the traditional book report or a study on Chile or whatever.
Right.
Or Kentucky, it's a communication,
right.
And there must be a reason that you are communicating, mm-hmm. and some kind of response or some kind of action that you want to emote or something that you want to cause or effect, right?
Right. You remember a couple of weeks ago we had on, we talked about the lady with the iPads, and she went through the idea that first you just kind of repeat what you do with your other technology, but the idea was really the redefinition. I think the storytelling, digital storytelling in its true form really goes into that redefinition. It's way higher level thinking than just the reporting on something with pictures and words.
What makes it higher level?
Because putting together all the medium, you know, gathering the photo or the images, the imagery, and the suitable background music, that in itself, you play around with background music with kids and try to get that connected to creating emotions. That is really fun and it really opens their eyes. It's they've watched, you know, a million movies, and they know some of the soundtracks, but they never really put the idea together that that particular music sets the stage or creates that emotion.
Creates the tone.
So, yeah, and I think it isn't easy to create this, and to create the emotion you're looking for is not easy. That takes a lot of work and a lot of thought and a lot of planning. And like you said, when you come to assess, you having a good rubric. Mm-hmm. When I do this, I don't know, Sally, if in the show notes here, I'm looking if you link to that page in my wiki page with the whole assignment on there. I did include there's some examples of the digital stories that we did, and then there's also the whole assignment is there, so you can look at the rubric as well. Because I think to do this kind of thing, it's real important to connect that rubric with the piece that you want to create, because it's a lot more nebulous than,
sure,
you know, a lot of assignments.
So what things are you assessing? What are you looking for? What's a good one versus what's a bad storytelling exercise?
Okay. You're going to look for, is it clear to me, the reviewer of your piece, can I understand what the dramatic question you're posing to your audience is?
Okay.
Do I get that?
Right.
Is it resolved at the end? You know, have you created the awareness, the emotion you want? Are they going to be able to come to the conclusion that you're trying to get them to come to?
Right.
The appropriate use, you know, is the imagery appropriate to get that? Is the background music appropriate to get that? You know, the pacing also, then you get into the pacing, the timing, the flow, the fluency of a piece. It's just like writing. If you talk about the 6+1 writing traits, we talk about fluency in writing, fluency in creating the story. Even though you're not really using many words, there's the fluency idea is you can make that connection, that parallel.
Certainly movement. Yes. You want to move somebody from point A to B to C to D, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that would suggest maybe some traditional tools maybe are necessary on the front end, like storyboarding and those kinds of things, outlining and storyboarding?
Yes, and I found, I usually use my own, but I found in doing this hunting around yesterday a website that has tons of storyboarding activities and assessment activities on that, right from Bernadine Porter, who is considered the kind of authority on digital storytelling, and as far as I know, and she calls them digitales, and that website was very helpful to me because it gave me some new ideas. I the one I connected to my wiki page with the apartheid examples of the digital stories, that came from her and from the site that we show you. I think we have that site listed here, so you'll be able to see that. I learn tech. Sally, does that ring a bell?
Sure. We'll make sure and include it in the show notes for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to talk a little bit about some of the tools that are available? Now, this used to be a lot harder than it is, and it kind of varied by platform. You needed specific software, and you know, the technology was a little bit out of reach for a lot of schools and beyond the capabilities of a lot of the kids. They were professional software packages and so forth. That's not the case anymore, is it?
No. I think there's lots of different ways you can go on the tools side. But, Martin, I guess it wasn't too hard. All you needed was a slide projector and a record player, apparently.
Those would be hard to find these days.
A record player?
Yeah. Put to it. Now, you can do this on a traditional computer setup, certainly. You're going to want to have some imagery that's appropriate. So like in Gail's example, you might go out and take the pictures of the birds in New London. Or you could find imagery online as well to suit your needs. But you can feed that to different tools. A good example might be something like Animoto, which educators can get a free account and set up accounts for their students. And it just becomes a digital slideshow by adding this imagery and laying down the background music and whatever text or audio you want to include with that. Another one that comes to mind is VoiceThread. Both of those great tools for images and video components. And certainly with the mobile society that we live in today, you could do it on a mobile device. There are about 1.5 million, apparently, apps for the iPad that you could use to do digital storytelling. And good luck getting through that long list. But there's a wonderful site that we found. We'll include a link in the show note to Digital Storytelling with the iPad, a whole site dedicated and overflowing with apps. Gail, you did some playing around with a few iPad apps.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. There's some that I've used before, but what I wanted to do was I still haven't – we don't have a ton of – we have 4 iPads for the whole school, so it's not like everybody in the room is going to be doing it on the iPad. So I haven't really veered too far. And if you're going to do the digital story, that voice, that soundtrack is so important. And a lot of these apps – they don't include all the important things. And the thing that many of them leave out is the ability to do a soundtrack. Mm-hmm. They give you the ability to record your voice, but they don't necessarily give you the soundtrack capability to add the music. And so to me, that kind of became a dividing line as to what I could use and what I couldn't use for a true digital story. And I found that sticking with, I bought iMovie for my iPad, which I didn't have before, $4.99. I made a movie on my iPad, which I had not done before. So I know now that iPads can be used that way, and the kids could do it the same way. I used Animoto on my iPad. I used it on my iPhone. I made a movie on my phone, which I really don't think I'm going to do that often, but it can be done. So all of these things... And I'm sorry I'm being so Mac-minded here, but that's where I do most of my stuff. So it just comes out that way. But I see now that you would be able to do these things on, if you had to bring your own initiative and somebody brought in a smartphone, well, in this case, it would have to be an iPhone. But, you could actually have a lot of different handheld devices doing the same thing with the same app at the same time.
And a lot of these tools are Web 2.0 tools. Animoto and VoiceThread are all online, so it really doesn't matter. You could be on a Chromebook or a Mac or a PC or an iPad or whatever. The ability to capture media obviously is going to be a requirement, whatever you do, whether you capture with a mobile phone or with a camera or whatever. There's a bunch of open source music out there. There's all kinds of resources out there to bring together, and these tools... I haven't used VoiceThread before, although I've seen many VoiceThread presentations, but I have used Animoto before, and it's extremely simple. You throw all your stuff in there, and you can organize it, or you can have them organize it and make it into a very clean presentation. The one that you shared with me, Sally, was excellently done, and I don't know what age the child was that did it, but really you can go pretty low on the grade level with some of these tools.
Yes, you can.
I do have an example that we'll include in the show notes of an Animoto where my students in computer lab currently are just trying to tell a story about a topic. And this particular child chose movies and talked about some of the history of movies and things like that, but pretty much did it through imagery. He's got a picture of the first cartoon and a picture of Mickey Mouse, who was Steamboat Willie back in the day when it first started. And, a picture of The Wizard of Oz and things like that. So he goes back and tells the story and then comes forward from there and talks about how it's affected us. And so I think it's pretty telling with the imagery he chose.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there are very good things for little kids, too, that aren't. I guess I'm still of the, if you can make it on a computer and it's got a bigger screen, it's a lot better to, it seems easier to compose it to me. Mm-hmm. But the iPad, of course, and the phone has the advantage that you can walk around and capture your stuff and, the photos, the media, you can get in the device a lot easier, which is nice.
Right.
But if you're not doing the real digital story, you're just doing storytelling with these apps, that's a perfectly legitimate use of them too. Book Creator is the one I really like. Book Creator is $4.99 or $6.99. I can't remember. It's an app, and it allows kids to, again, it's on the iPad, and it allows kids to create a book. They can draw. They can import pictures. They can draw. Sometimes they color pictures. They do some artwork, and I scan it in. So they did the Metamorphosis of a Butterfly, and it was a collaborative thing. They each had their picture of the stage. And the teacher was very good. She had a whole writing class where they had written out their scripts ahead of time, so they knew exactly what they were going to put with the pictures. My job was just to go in and help them do the technology, get the pictures and the stories together. And then what the neat thing about this is, it saves it into the iBook app on the iPad. Uh-huh. So now those kids can go back and, you know, when they make books, they go in there and they're on the shelf with all the other books that they bought or whatever. And it's just kind of a neat thing. They had their older grade buddies come in and they read their books to them. And that book creator is very, very neat.
Right.
And then there's another one called Story Wheel. And Story Wheel is free. You go in and you can have one player or two players or more. You spin this wheel, and the wheel, it's kind of like a Wheel of Fortune there. You spin this wheel, it makes the noise, it stops at a certain picture, and then you start recording. It records your voice. Okay, my one I did the other day, the rain cloud came up, so I started out. Of course, it was a dark and stormy night. And then the next player comes on, and he has to turn the wheel, and a random picture comes up. And so kids are creating a story as they go just on the fly, and that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Even little kids, my grandkids that aren't even in school yet or just barely school age, they like this, and they really do come up with some good things. Mm-hmm. And they figured out that you don't have to necessarily say the words. You can also sing the story.
Interesting.
So it's a lot of creativity that comes out. And you can teach beginning, middle, end of stories, which is where we start out in the lower grades when you teach writing and mm-hmm. teaching stories. So that's great for that.
Sounds cool. Sounds like a visual Mad Libs.
Yeah. The bad thing about that one is it's free, but then they have all these other packages you can buy. One is a pirate package. One is a princess package. All these things that if you have kids about that age, those are the ones they want to use.
Okay.
So there's a lot of opportunity to invest there.
You've got something for your talk like a pirate day then.
That's right. I have to mention another good one that I was very impressed with called Real Director. REEL, Real Director. And this is an app, again, that you can use on the iPad and the iPhone. However, it didn't work at all on the iPad. It didn't even have, I went into the help section, my screen didn't even look like it was supposed to look. So I have a support call into them right now, but it was $1.99. So on the iPhone, it worked great. That's the one I used to make this whole little movie on the iPhone with sound, a soundtrack, everything. You could make a true digital story with this Real Director. And I'm sure something's just goofy. So it must be some glitch in the iPad, which would be nicer to work on than the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
But Real Director is worth a look. That could do the real thing, the real digital story.
Interesting.
Then I found one more I got to tell you about, which is, I found a ton of them. They're all in there. But Blurb Mobile, okay? It's called Blurb Mobile, and it is, I believe, free. That one was amazing to me. I did it on the iPhone, and you can make movies. You can use voice. I think it gave you the opportunity for music. I didn't put music in there, but I think it did have that option. It had a lot of options for the free little app that it was. It was quite impressive to me. So that one you might want to check out. That one has the social aspect to it. So when you're done with your movie, you can put it online on the social stream, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that, but then when I went to the social stream, I couldn't find my movie. So I don't know. I didn't look real hard. But Blurb Mobile is one that might be worth checking out, too.
It seems like we're getting more and more of these tools, and more of them are going online, too, both for mobile and for just web-based tools. So you just may want to continue to search around and see what's out there. Animoto and VoiceThread are the two big ones, but you know, there's more and more coming on. And even the traditional tools like Movie Maker and iMovie and whatever are providing more and more functionality that allow you to do transitions, add voiceovers, tell a story, basically.
And Real Director lets you do transitions, too. Mm-hmm. I was surprised because not many of them have that.
Great. So all that and more on our show notes page. We've got all those resources plus examples. So if you're still kind of scratching your head, well, what is digital storytelling? We've got some great examples there, both created by folks on the podcast here today, but also from far-flung places where there's just some cool stuff out there. And all at a fairly inexpensive cost if you're interested in going down that route. Shall we move on, ladies?
Sure.
Let's go to ministry resources.
And this week we have an article to share called "Should Your Church Have a Blog?" That's a great question. Mm-hmm. Martin, I think you were the one who found this article.
I did this a couple weeks ago. Church Mag website. Yeah, churchm.ag. And I thought this was excellent reading because a lot of churches are asking this question. Do we need a blog? Do we want a blog? If we do, what should we put on it? And this really takes just this blog post kind of takes you step by step through what your church should do on a blog, what it shouldn't do. I'll just read through a couple of the do's and don'ts. First of all, on the don'ts, what not to blog about. Don't blog about upcoming church functions, special event announcements, church news, general information. So don't make it a newspaper. Don't make it an extended electronic newsletters. Studies show that people aren't interested in that. They can get that elsewhere. They can get that on Sunday morning, whatever. What to blog about, and this kind of ties in nicely with our digital storytelling theme of the day, stories. They call them testimonies here, but we do have stories all over the place in our churches, whether they be inspirational stories of people coming to faith, coming to the church, or funny stories from church functions, deeper insights into Sunday sermon, a recap of Sunday sermon, parenting ideas and tips, marriage pointers, awesome YouTube videos, helpful, insightful, and fun links, and so on and so forth. There's a section here about who's going to write the stuff, how often should there be new posts, and then really where to get started. So all kinds of cool stuff in a very, very concise, short blog post, but it's worth the read if your church has a blog or is considering one. So a great ministry resource, I think.
Very good.
And we'll put that in the show notes.
At one point on this podcast, it seems like we talked about blogging every week.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. I know I, for one, haven't kept up with that, but I think this article has great ideas for churches and for pastors out there that maybe want to start that conversation.
Yep, absolutely. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Gail is our guest host. You get the honors, hitting lead off.
All right. Well, I'm going to pick this week something called Photobabble, FOTOBabble.com. Okay. So you can do Photobabble on your computer. So no matter what kind of computer you have, it will work for you. And then you can also have an app for either the iPhone or the iPad to do Photobabble. But everyone can do it on the computer. And what it is a little program that lets you upload a picture of yourself or someone else. Actually, it wouldn't have to be a portrait. It could be a picture of the place you'd just been at, any kind of photo. And then it gives you the ability to record. So you can record a message about this. On my little kids' birthdays, I send them one of their baby pictures and talk about how big they've grown and that kind of thing. I'm doing that this year for all my grandkids on their birthdays. But
neat.
The real point of it is that you can use it on Facebook. So it's advertised as, if you want to put this on your Facebook page where you have a picture of you giving a message on your Facebook page, a welcome message or whatever you want to talk about, I guess, but kind of PR'd that way, Photobabble. You can, of course, with one click, put it on your Twitter feed or your Facebook page or send it through email or the usual things. But it's a very simple, straightforward, and I've only used it in a personal way. I've never used it at school. But I was thinking, actually, a really neat thing to do would be here with the Mother's Day, Father's Day stuff coming up.
Yeah.
You could very easily have the kids get a picture. You could take a picture themselves, or you could have them bring a picture from home, or in some way have them record a little voice, their little voices giving a message to their moms for Mother's Day, and then email that to them.
So it's basically a talking picture.
Yeah.
Right?
Very simple, but when people get it, they're very surprised and they like it.
Looks like you can even do slideshows here. I'm just reading here, so it's not doesn't have to be just a single picture. It could be multiple pictures.
You can do a couple pictures in a row, yeah.
Very nice tie into digital storytelling here. I like it. Good. And the app is free, I think, on mobile devices. I see it here in iTunes. Is it available on any other platform?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, our Android users usually point that out to us, so we'll find out pretty soon. But it's definitely on the web, so it's available to anybody. So.
Right.
Very good.
That's why I picked it. I didn't want to leave anyone out on my pick.
Okay. Very good. Nice pick. I like it. I had not heard of that, so excellent. Sally?
My turn, and I'm going to point you to an iPad, kind of a geeky way to set up your Safari browser on your iPad. I am a big fan of Digo, and I'm a big fan of my iPad, but getting links into Digo that I find on my iPad can be a bit of a challenge.
Not so much fun, right?
Yeah. There is a Digo browser that has Digo linkage built into it, and back in the day before they upgraded Safari to have tabbed browsing, the Digo browser was really nice because it came with tabs. It's a lot like Google Chrome.
But they haven't been keeping that very much up to date, though. I've noticed that it's kind of been laying fallow there for a while, the Chrome browser. So
I haven't really been using it, mainly because one thing that Apple locks down on the iPad is your browser, your default browser.
Yep.
So if you click on a link, say, on Facebook or in your Google Reader or whatever, and you go to open a web page, it's going to open in Safari. You don't have a choice as to what to drive that to. So Safari is basically my browser on my iPad, and by choosing that and using that, I'm losing the capability of easily tagging things that I find in my iPad browsing until now. Last week, I came across a blog post. It's on the blog called EdTech Kit. Seeing is Believing, and it's titled How to Enable Digo Bookmarking in Safari on the iPad. And this blogger actually recorded a little how-to video and demonstrated the process and also linked to the instructions, which are out on the Digo website. I'm not quite sure how I missed these instructions. Maybe it's a fairly new development. But there are step-by-step instructions, and yes, it's a little bit geeky. Mm-hmm. You have to add a bookmark, and then you have to go back in and edit that bookmark so that it actually takes advantage of some JavaScripting. But the results are beautiful, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. On my Safari browser now, I have a button, and I'm just getting there, and it says Digo on it. You can name it whatever you want. But if you want to add a link to a page, you just click that button, and it loads a little Digolet, they're called, a little Java interface drops down, and you can bookmark the page, you can highlight the page, you can add sticky notes. So all those annotation features that are part of Digo can be added right there, incorporated into your browser. And it immediately sprung to the top of my list of favorite things because that just opens up my iPad browsing to all new features. So if you are an iPad user and a Digo fan like I am, then you'll want to check out my friend's video tutorial. His name is Kit, I believe. And Kit posted a great video tutorial that walks you right through it. And I'll also have a link to the instructions from the Digo website.
Your new best friend.
Yeah, definitely. I tweeted him, and he wrote me right back.
Oh, really?
And said he was glad that it was a help to me.
Cool.
So
it is cool. It's a very simple thing, but very useful, and it works pretty well.
Yes, it does.
Too, so my pick of the week is actually, I think, a rerun. I think I've made this pick in the distant past, but it's been relaunched with a little bit different model, and it's from our friends at Microsoft. It's called SkyDrive, and it's basically a Dropbox SugarSync competitor. It's been around a long time. It's kind of flown under the radar. It doesn't get as much press, I think, as Dropbox and those kinds. Mostly probably because it's not as well integrated into mobile apps where you can't save stuff directly to it. But that's changing, too. SkyDrive is cloud-based storage. They started out with 25 gigabytes. And with this recent relaunch, they've actually dropped that down to 7 gigabytes, so it sounds like a bad thing. But if you are a previous SkyDrive user, and if you go now or quickly, I don't know how long this will last, you can actually upgrade or opt back into the 25 gigabytes so you don't lose those. But what they found is 99% of their users were under 7 gigabytes, so I think that's where they put the that 7 gigabyte limit, but if you're a current user, you can bump that back up to 25. But the real news is that you can now map all those drives or your SkyDrive content to different PCs or Macs. There's an app for each Mac PC. I don't think Linux has an application yet, but so basically it can act just like another file folder, similar to what Dropbox does, and then it automatically syncs to every place that you have it installed, plus the cloud. So it basically gives you a 25 gigabyte file folder in which to organize your stuff. It's automatically backed up both to the cloud, and then whatever other device you're using it on keeps it in sync perfectly. They've also upped, I don't know if this is just now, but fairly recently, the file size limit to 2 gigabytes. So that it used to be like 50 megabytes, which was a real limitation. Now it's 2 gigabytes in file size. You also get along with that all the Office apps with a Windows Live account. You need a Windows Live account. But you get Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, all of those Office apps are in an online version. So you can store all those files here. You can store any kind of file type you want. And if 25 gigabytes, or if you're even stuck with the 7 gigabytes and that's not enough, the upgrade price is extremely reasonable, certainly compared to Dropbox, which is like, yeah, I don't know what it is right now, but you know, maybe $20 a month for 10 gigabytes, something like that, at Dropbox. Here, for $10 a year, you can add 20 gigabytes for the whole year. So they kind of blew that pricing model out of the water. And I think a lot of what we're seeing in this space is kind of in reaction to what they think Google might be launching here pretty quickly with their Google Drive or G Drive. I think some of these vendors like Microsoft are trying to get ahead of the curve a little bit and offer something that's going to be even more attractively priced. There are mobile apps, I know, on iPhone and Android to access all your content on SkyDrive. And if you don't do the $10 a year, it's which is very inexpensive. The price is right. It's absolutely free to just get the 7 or 25 gigs for pre-existing users. So very good tool for backup, storage, file sharing. You can also share files this way, either collaborate on them with other people via an email address or just make them open to the public. So lots of features here. I think Microsoft has finally brought a number of different products together here. They used to have Live Mesh and SkyDrive, and there were a couple other products, and they brought them finally all together. That making a lot of sense to consider this if you're looking for cloud storage.
I'm looking at that Dropbox site, Martin, and it looks like their first pro level is 50 gigs, so quite a bit gigs. More storage, and it's $99 a year, quite a bit more money.
Right.
So.
Right.
I would think 20 gig at 10 is a much better deal.
I think it's half that for SkyDrive. 50. I want to say it's $50 a year for 100 gigs, something like that. So there's a big difference. Somebody needs to get the doorbell.
Avon calling at some point. Like.
Do you need to get that?
No, it's okay. We'll keep right on.
Let's
going.
Move on. A couple things of interest, Sally.
Yeah, we want to mention our Final Web for Dummies and Final Web for Teachers class. We're doing something different this summer, Martin, and going online with those two class offerings. We're going to be using Google Hangouts to offer classes the week of July 10th and again the week of July 17th. And the price is very reasonable, and you get to spend time with Martin and me and get all your final web questions answered in one fell swoop.
The virtual Martin and the virtual Sally. Yes.
There you go. If you're interested, we have more details online as well as registration information. So check it out. Price is $48.99 per day or $128.99 for the 3-day dummies class. Yep, We'd love to have you join us.
Don't have to travel to Milwaukee. Don't have to travel to New Ulm. You just do it right there in your office. And I think there's a cost savings there, too. So we're hoping to get – we do have a class size limit of 9 people. So just be aware of that. So.
Mm-hmm. Wells Tech is branching out. We are now on Stitcher Radio. Can you tell us about that, Martin?
Yeah. I was not aware of Stitcher before, but my son said, hey, Dad, I'm not listening to your Wells Tech podcast unless you get on Stitcher. And I did a little research because he was, you know, singing its praises. And at the end of the day, I looked at it and said, hey, there's a lot of stuff on here. And there was no cost to get our there was an application form. They ask you how many listeners you have, blah, 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 what the purpose is. And you plug in all your information. About a week later, I got an email back that said, hey, you're on Stitcher Radio. And it's a little bit different than your typical podcast catcher or something that's going to download your music. This is all streamed. But it has, a very good buffering technology so that once you start the stream, it's constantly working on getting that downloaded to your device. So I've had almost zero buffering at all, even though it's all online. It seems like it downloads it, you know, in real time and stays quite a bit ahead. So even if you lose connectivity to the internet, it still continues to play the the podcast. So that you just go to Stitcher Radio, download it on your mobile device. I think it's available on Android, iPhone, iPad. And then just search for Wells Tech and you'll find it. And then you can create a station around it. And I'm probably thinking about adding our other audio podcasts to that as well. So look for that in the future, our daily devotion and our Through the Bible in 3 Years should go on there as well. Don't forget we do have a Wells app that you can download that provides all that and more as well. So lots of options to get our stuff.
Good thing we have youngsters among us that keep us in tune with the latest cutting-edge stuff.
Huh? Yeah.
Thank you, Aaron, for that.
That's right. Let's go to community feedback.
I want to make mention that this Sunday has been designated as Internet Evangelism Day. And if you aren't familiar with the Internet Evangelism Day website, you might want to check out the resources they provide there. They have a page specifically dedicated to raising awareness within your congregation of evangelism opportunities via the web or whatever, teaching your people how to share a link to something going on your church website or a blog article or whatever it may be. So lots of thought goes into this each year, and they try to bring the focus during the month of April to this, and specifically this Sunday. So if you're interested at all, check out the resources on their website. Also, we had a lot of interesting links shared in our Wells Tech Digo group, starting with one that I came upon. I am seriously into an audio video project. I don't know if you'd call this digital storytelling or not, but I have a child who's experiencing prom for the first time this year, and mom volunteered to do the baby photo video collage. And I needed some background music, and I ended up using Audio Jungle for that project. And this was a new website to me, and it is not free. You have to pay for the clips, but I needed something longer that would loop well. I needed to tell a story, and I needed the right music, and I found it on audiojungle.com. Very well done. You can search a lot of different ways. Things are tagged. You can, you know, look for links of songs and popularity and the number of downloads. People leave comments and things. And then they actually have a payment system where if you put money on your account, you get a cheaper price for the downloads that you select. But then you're kind of locked into having that money sitting there for future purchases or whatever. But I was really pleased with the quality I found there. And, you know, we've talked a lot about free resources, but I was looking to step it up a little bit for this video. I expect that, you know, it'll be shared on the internet quite a bit, and wanted to make sure all my ducks were in a row with copyright infringement and things like that. Just wanted to be careful. So by purchasing the music, then I know, you know, that I have the rights to use it for this project. So happy with that find.
Very good.
Martin, you tagged something called 7 Gmail add-ons that make email suck less.
Yes. Despite the title, it's very well-written and informative. 7 tools, add-ons that I think are all free that do various things and in various different ways. Some of them associate your Gmail and your contacts with your social networks. Some of them allow you to post-date email so you can send them at a later time. Others help you do email cleanup. So if you're bumping up against your storage, it'll find your big, it's called Find Big Mail. So it'll look for those large attachments that you can get out of there. All kinds of different little utilities that you can easily install. Many of them work just with Chrome because they're Chrome plugins or Firefox plugins. So just be aware of that as you look through the list. But if you're looking to optimize your Gmail experience, you may want to look at these seven goodies here.
A few more links that were shared. Art coloring pages. This has coloring pages by famous artists. So they've taken Van Gogh and turned it into a coloring page. So if you're teaching an art appreciation lesson, you may want to look here for some coloring pages. Also, top 5 ways to build a bad church website came out of some reading that was recently done. You know, we all want to avoid these pitfalls, and I think this article spells them out very well, things to avoid when you're looking at your church website. And then finally, a link to Cyberary Man. Cyberary Man is someone who compiles all kinds of education resources, and he has a huge collection of educational websites organized for students and parents and teachers, and then sub-organized in it about 1 million different ways. So just an excellent repository. Not the best web design behind the Cyberary Man website, but that doesn't really matter when you're getting access to all those great links and resources. So if you have a specific need education-wise, I'm guessing Cyberary Man has an answer for you. So check it out.
Then again, the card catalog wasn't the most beautiful of things, but very functional in its day.
Yeah, but it didn't have like blazing neon yellow in it and all these really interesting colors.
Okay. There's a whole new position, you know, Cybrarian, which is just kind of an amazing thing that is digital, kind of moves ahead of, you know, our traditional paper. You know, that's to be able to curate what's online is a skill.
Definitely.
So, yes.
Next week, Sally, I'm looking forward to next week. How about you?
I am too, and so is Naomi Hinkle. She wrote to me and said, I can't wait for next week's podcast because we're going to be talking about the 7 best photo organizing and editing tools. Mm-hmm. And as Naomi said, she says she'd like to do a lot more with photos for monthly church newsletter, but somehow, you know, things get in the way and we don't have the right tools to do that. So she's hoping that she can learn from all our listeners. And with that being said, we'd love to hear from all our listeners as to what your favorite photo tools are.
And we've gotten some submissions already, but we can use more that might make our list. You have to do it quickly, though, because Sally and I will be meeting later this week to put together the 7 best. So get those in quickly. There are many different ways to do that. You can go to our website and leave a comment there. That's wellstech.wells.net. Email us, wellstech@wells.net. We've mentioned Digo. We've mentioned the listserv in the past. You can always leave us an audio voicemail about your favorite photo organizing or editing tool. So many different ways to connect with us. We would love to hear you and get your stuff on the list. Even if you don't make the list, we'll probably mention it anyway. So if you feel strongly about something, please share. That is going to about do it. Sally, Gail, thank you so much for your efforts today. Well done.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Martin.
And let's close the show with the music of In His Service, their song, Send Me. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. You are what makes this show go, and we're glad that you're tuning in each week. Tune in next week.